morning and welcome to KGNU Public Affair. My name is Tish Buford. I am your illustrious host. And we have with us this morning somebody that I am just completely gaga over. I think I have a girl crush on her talent. She is phenomenal and can't wait to get into some great discussion with her. And you guys are going to love her too. Please welcome the Emmy award-winning videographer, the talented, illustrious Miss Summer Nettles. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I am thrilled to have you.
I'm thrilled to be here.
You know, I know that you're very involved in media and you started in this industry quite a while ago. We're going to get into your history in the industry, what you're working on now, and some of the future projects you have coming up. But I want to take the first part of our interview to have people get to know who you are, because there are not a lot of women of color, specifically Black women, that are in media behind the camera. And I want to get into that in some detail with you this morning. So please tell the audience about yourself and how did you get into this line of work and how long have you been doing this? And give us a little bit about your resume and what you've done.
Yeah, so I actually started in radio. I was on the air for 10 years. So I started like most baby DJs out in like the middle of nowhere in the cornfields in Champaign, Illinois, and at Q96. And I was there for like a year or two before I started my career kind of late. So that's the other thing is that like, I think a lot of people, for good or ill, like really get hung up on their age and like when they start. So I started on the radio at 25. And I had studied journalism at University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I ended up leaving school a semester early because of some traumatic issues that had happened. And I decided I wanted to go ahead and just pursue radio. So I did. I did an internship at B96 at like 25. And like in entertainment years, if you're starting at 25, you're like, oh my God, I'm so old. Like, you know? So I went ahead and did that. And then I got hired on at Q96 in Champaign. From there, I went to Fort Wayne, Indiana to Hot 107.9, where I got fired after 3 days and then rehired 40 days later and then given the man who fired me's job. And I was there for 3 years. We went from 10th to 3rd in the market. After that, I decided it was time to move again. So I went to Indianapolis and was on the air there. And then left there for Chicago for 103.5 Kiss FM. And I was on the air for 3 years there, I think about. And I made the weird transition, something that radio folks rarely do, from radio to television. So I started associate producing at Judge Mathis. And NBC just happened to be in the same building. We have a very close family friend who saw my hustle. And she said, why don't you come and check out the newsroom? And I was like, yes, this is where I've been trying to get like all the time.
And that was your progression, right?
Yes, that's where
gotcha. I gotcha.
This is it. So I got it in an NBC Chicago, WMAQ. I started on the community affairs desk. I got promoted to an assignment desk editor position. And then I finally finished my degree, probably like in my 30s at this point, because radio is a bunch of pirates. You don't need a degree to be on the radio. So, So I finished that last semester. I triple majored at that point because, you know, college makes you take a lot of credits just because. So I have a triple major in digital filmmaking, journalism and public relations. And then I started doing camera work for NBC News just on the side, and we kind of like walked into an Emmy. So I interviewed 45. I filmed an interview with Mr. Trump in the Trump Tower.
Okay.
Which was interesting because he had bottles of water with his face on them. Crazy.
Okay. That is
random.
Either strange or very narcissistic. Let me back you up a little bit. You said you guys had just kind of walked into some Emmy-winning work. Can you give us a little more background on that? What were you working on? What project was this? And what was the name of the show?
It's called Just One Drink. And the whole, Marcus's last name escapes me in this moment, but he's wonderful. And he was a pioneer in as much as like, he was like, let's do digital journalism for online, you know? And so we were shooting a high quality, high resolution, video for the web, for a web series. And we interviewed like hotelier Ian Schrager, Donald Trump, so many people. The Gianna, she hosts a television show, or she used to be really big on E, and she opened a restaurant in Chicago. So her and her husband, quite a few interviews. I mean, I had been interviewing people though, because I'd been on the radio. So I'd like, been interviewing, been hosting, been the MC at concerts, like big concerts for like Nelly Furtado. Mm-hmm. And the Black Eyed Peas, stuff like that.
Okay.
So it wasn't like it was a brand new thing. It was just very brand new not to be in the front, but right.
in the back. So when you made the adjustment to go from in front of the camera, or I mean, at least behind the microphone as a radio personality, and these radio stations such as Kiss FM are very popular, and these are nationwide shows. How did you feel to remove your personality from the mic to put it behind the camera? What kind of transition was that for you, and how difficult was it?
I think for me, it was an amazing transition. It's quite freeing, actually.
Okay.
I'm a plus-sized Black Latina, on background, like my mom's Black Irish Native American. She looks like Claire Huxtable. She's adorable. Am I? She talks like her too. She's like, you better.
Oh,
you don't believe that. That meat is greasy. You know, I mean, she got
a little accent in that tone, right?
No games. I've never met Boo Boo the Fool. All I know is my mom wants to know, do I think she's him? Like, I don't know who Boo Boo the Fool is. You know?
Yeah, I think we've all been introduced to some metaphoric character that our parents made up that we were supposed to be afraid of or not be.
Yes.
So yes. Boo Boo the Fool is something that's very, very common.
I never seen Boo Boo.
I could not spot Boo Boo in the daytime with a flashlight in a lineup. Don't know who Boo Boo is. But I knew Boo Boo had issues, right. And I didn't want to be him.
No.
So no kid wanted to be Boo Boo.
No.
And so your mother sounds like a no nonsense woman.
She is.
And being a woman of color and being plus size, I'm sure you ran into your fair amount of discrimination in this industry, in front and behind the camera, right?
Hugely. And it oddly, my experience in radio was more discriminatory than my experience in television. And
really?
I owe that experience to the fact that all of my bosses in radio were white men. All of them. And then all of my, for the first 3 years I was in television, all of my bosses were Black women. And
okay.
So that set up an incredibly different dichotomy for me. So it wouldn't matter, like in Indianapolis, my midday show was like second in the market. Like I would leave Indy and come home to Chicago, and people would hear me like, and they'd be like, Summer? And I'd be like, yeah. And they're like, oh my God, I just moved from Indianapolis. I love Where's Your Man at Wednesday. You know what I mean?
Right.
And on background, Where's Your Man at Wednesday is like, you call me, then I call your man. You call me and tell me where you think your man is. I call your man and ask him where he actually is.
Okay.
And if he's there, then you win. And if he's not, you lose on so many levels. You know?
Wow.
It's hilarious. So yeah, people love that segment. And like, we had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah.
I would go places and people would hear my voice and know it. But the whole time I was there, the male, the white male, blonde hair, blue eyed general manager was harassing my program director also a white male, because he wanted to put like a size 2 literal like car show model on the air instead of me. And it's interesting, the expectation that right. they had that I would perform optimally despite the constant pressure. I mean, like they wanted me to train her. She had like no on-air experience, right? Like here I had like a certificate in broadcasting that I paid for, right?
Right.
Like, very much traditional Black women, right? We believe that you can educate yourself out of poverty. No one tells you that you can't educate yourself into fairness, right? So, yeah.
Very profound, yeah.
Right, so yeah, so like this size 2 white woman with blonde hair and blue eyes, like they were like, can you teach her how to make music beds? Like, which is like the music you talk over. Can you teach her how to do a promo? Can you teach her how to, you know, like do a live hit? Like, can you teach her all these things? They wanted part of my contract, which was underfunded, totally underpaid, was that I was gonna get 5 remotes a month or something like that to supplement my income. They weren't giving me my remotes, which is like when you go out to a live event and meet people, they would give her my remotes. So that like $500 was going to someone who really was like a side chick, right? Who wasn't even really, who didn't have a show, couldn't run a board, couldn't run a mic, you know? And like, and again, like, you know, this is how it goes in these industries. The head of HR was a Black woman, because so many times that position is a puppet position, there to secure the interests of the company, not our own interests. And for good or ill, like a lot of times we end up on the plantation because you start getting a big paycheck and you think, I'm going to protect the interests of this company. Like, no, this company is racist.
Right.
And you need to protect the integrity of our society.
Right. And you stumbled into something here that I want to get into on the other side of the break, because I'm sure the people who are listening, they hear the words plantation and races and alarm bells are going off. And we want to clarify that, because this is not to indict all radio stations or all management of radio stations, but we want to talk about the culture that women of color had to deal with in media, specifically in television and in radio, because it is very relevant. It is very present still. And even in 21st century and in 2020, women of color are still fighting for faces and spaces in this medium, in this market, to be represented fairly, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to interview you, because you're a bit of an anomaly. And we don't have a lot of this representation in this industry. And also because you're extraordinarily talented.
Thank you.
You're one of the best kept secrets in this industry. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show this morning to better introduce you to Colorado for those who don't already know you. So we're gonna get into some more of your background, what your day job is, if you have one, and talk about your next project that you have coming up and some of the other things that you'll be working on in the near future. So we're gonna go ahead and pause real quick to do a station identification. You're listening to KGNU Community Radio. I'm your host of Public Affair, Tish Buford. And in the studio today, we have the lovely and gorgeously talented Miss Summer Nettles, Emmy Award winning videographer. And we're talking about her career path, her background, and just her backstory in media in front and behind the camera. Now, you do some strategic conflict planning resolution on top of everything else you've done in your illustrious career so far. So what made you decide to get involved in that, considering what your job is in media? Mm-hmm. What made you take on that new challenge?
Well, you know, I started, once I was at NBC, I decided to get my master's. So I finished my bachelor's. I decided to get my master's from Northwestern. I got my master's and I came out to Denver and I got cancer. And then I decided I was going to get out of news. And so I transitioned into government. And in the government space, in the media space, and in the social media space, what I was really noticing is that like, government agencies have a really antiquated way of doing things. they're not ready to let go of the reins in a way that today's media demands. So government really wants to control the message, you know, and they want to like preclude like input or feedback directly a lot of times from constituents, you know. They get very afraid about being candid or about kind of letting their hair down and being relatable, right? But in today's day and age, like that's not realistic. You can no longer be, you can't be the punitive institutional piece anymore where like we're the stodgy government and you're gonna have to come to us, you know. No, that time is done, you know. And so working in these spaces, I recognized that they needed a strategic intervention. They needed counseling on how to communicate with people directly. They needed counseling on what is legal and what is illegal on social media. And they needed counseling on how to create content and finding out what the most relevant demographics are for them so they can choose a platform that will best speak to the people the way they need to speak to them, right? And they also need coaching on how to reply and respond to certain concerns, you know? So part of that is really unpacking racism and perception, because once you enter the online social media space, right? Like we have a voice there that we don't have anywhere else. Like Black Twitter is real, boo. Like, you know, like we have a voice in the, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interject, but you said something that was very poignant. Social media is kind of an equalizer.
Amen.
Because it gives autonomy to color, size, race, gender, and you can come in with a blank whiteboard, for a lack of a better term, and pretty much say what you want. Now, with you being a strategic communicator, you're basically grooming the message pre-delivery and guiding and instructing these professional entities how to communicate to demographics that are outside their wheelbase, more or less. Yes. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the biggest challenge that I have found in social media is that people become intellectually lazy.
Amen. Say it. Yes.
And they have keyboard courage with no forethought. And people seem to be, in my opinion, more accountable when they have to face you. So because social media is so prevalent and at the forefront, it has allowed people not to just to become, in my opinion, intellectually lazy.
Absolutely.
And they don't want to flex that frontal lobe, you know?
No, they don't. And one of the things that I love to do is encourage people to call me. Like if I'm coaching a communicator in a government space, I say, you know, if you've gone back and forth with someone who's trolling you for an extended period of time and it's like a no-win, tell them to call you and leave the phone number right there, because it's public, right? This is public knowledge. It's public information. Everyone has the number, you know what I mean? If they choose to Google it or look for it. Now, once you've offered to have them call you directly and you've put that out there in the world for everyone to see, it's kind of like, oh, all right, well, I guess I just put that fire out, right? Like it's instant cooling water on something that can be very hot. And it also, if that person doesn't follow through, discredits that person, right? Like you can even follow up on the thread and say, I was looking very forward to hearing from you.
Right.
Unfortunately, you've never reached out regarding this concern, right. But we're here Monday through Friday. So talk to you soon, right? You know?
Yeah.
Cause you want people to see that, yes, you're a government agency who's accountable to your constituents, to your community, to your residents.
And in this day and age, the responsibility of being accountable for messaging is so critical because we're at such an inflection of racial accountability and human and social equity. Your role as a CEO of your own company, which is Greater Purposes Media LLC, you know, you focus on this. You focus on strategic communication as we just got into a few minutes ago, to help expand people's communication market to really, I don't want to say cater to, but better communicate with communication with communities of color. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's accurate?
Absolutely.
Okay. And to that vein, you have started working on a project called She Quit, which is going to be a 6-episode series focusing on the exodus of Black women from the traditional workforce as a result of its significant negative impacts on their health, their finances, relationships with men, with women, their mother, their children, co-workers. So it's going to be a broad swath of intersection of relationships, triumphs, lows, challenges. And this seems like it's going to be a very, very interesting and very intricate series. And I want to get into that a little bit before we get out of here today. But I also want to touch base on something you mentioned, because I don't want this to slide by. You are a cancer survivor, and that is something that needs to be praised and celebrated. You know, and you had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma back in 2014, and you were here 6 years later. So congratulations on that. And we're blessed to still have you here with us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have a few minutes left here, and please tell us about your new project, She Quits. We'd love to hear a little bit about that and share that with the audience this morning.
Yeah. So Greater Purpose, so the company services two sides. It services a nonprofit government agency side, and then we produce content that can be commercialized or funded. You know, and so the content that we produce that can be commercial or funded in partnership with like a PBS is documentary content and podcasts that are geared toward informing our communities, our communities, like our larger communities and our communities of color about lots of different things. And so She Quit, like, as you said, is about the exodus of Black women from the traditional workforce. Black women in Colorado, I hope I have percentage correct, are starting businesses at 168 times the rate that they were just 10 years ago. So what that tells us is, and we're also taking part-time jobs that'll give us health insurance and then doing our business. And that's, that what that tells us is that we feel like we're not fitting in to the space, or the space isn't fitting us, right? And so She Quit really takes that and breaks it down. And the objective is to do that in a way that is enlightening, creates urgency, and also the capacity to address the problem and work towards economic equality in these spaces. White women are on track to make the same amount of money as white men in 20 years. Black women are not on track to make the same amount of money as white men until 2119. So 99 years. Wow. Right. When I think about my own, and I don't have any children yet, right? But when I think about my own daughter and the fact that my grandmother brought my mother into the world, my mother brought me into the world, and now one day I hope to bring my own little person into the world. And like, my little person's gonna have to work her entire lifetime to catch up to you? Oh no, yeah. Not today. We're not doing that. Right. So right. I can't put her in that position. You know, and then to add insult to injury, because again, we really do believe that we can educate ourselves out of poverty. Black women carry on average over $10,000 more student debt than white men. So now we got a PhD, more debt, and I'm making 61 cents on the dollar for every, you know, for every $1 you make, white man. You know, now that's unacceptable, because we bought the dream. We did the American dream, and you're making it a nightmare for us. So don't tell me that like we're looking for handouts. No. We're looking for equality. You know,
absolutely.
I'm not looking for a handout. I'm looking for you to level the playing field. And if you don't understand that, that goes back to your point about people being lazy. It's because you haven't bothered to do the work. You haven't bothered to look at any research, you know?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. Continue.
And that's fine, but that inability to find information in a very concentrated manner is going to end, because that's what this documentary is going to do, right? I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to spoon feed it to you, so that there is no excuse for diminishing the role of Black women specifically in white-led workspaces. We're not doing that anymore. And then if you continue to, then okay, now we do have a real issue, right? This is like the woman in the park with the dog. Like, yeah, we thought we've been benevolent for so long. They know not what they do. Forgive them, Lord. No, now we know that you know, and we're gonna hold you accountable.
I love the messaging on this. So more or less, you're saying with this upcoming 6-episode documentary, which is going to come from a first-person narrative space of real Black women and women of color who are navigating through this world with these isms that are precluding their existence that they're trying to work through every day.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
They bring it home in so many ways. Their relationships suffer, because if a Black woman is married to another Black partner, you know, whether it be woman or man, it can be very difficult to be there for each other, because you're both in a trauma space, right?
Every day. Yep.
And so, like, our marriages, we're more likely to get divorced. Also, we're very contrarian, and this goes back to slavery, right? Like, our women are more likely the primary earners in the home, you know? So that also puts us in an interesting space, right? Because it actually engineers relationship problems in Black love, right? Because all this time we've been fed this madman perception of like the man breadwinner. So inherently, as soon as the woman figures out that she's probably going to have to be the breadwinner, she becomes resentful, right? And like, that's the truth of us. So we have to know that. Like, it's not that like Black men don't love us. It's not that they're not capable. It's that this is all, it's like Ibram Kendi said, stamped from the beginning, you know?
Absolutely. And this is going to be extraordinary, and I can't wait to see this project come to life. And you're just absolutely wonderful. And we are almost to the end of the show, and it went by so quickly. We could talk to you for another 2 hours, I'm telling you, because you're just that fabulous. Her name is Summer Nettles. If you do not know who she is, please Google her, look her up, and look at all the work she's done. In TV and media, in radio, and what is she and what she's working on now as her own CEO of her own company, Greater Purposes Media LLC. The documentary is going to be called She Quits. It's going to be a 6-episode documentary. And what date is that going to be released to the public, Summer?
June of 2021.
Okay, we're looking forward to it. So thank you so much for your wonderful insight and giving us your background story and your future story and all your contributions. So it was absolutely lovely to have you, and we can't wait to talk to you again. So thank you for having the time to talk to us today.
Thank you so much, Tish. I really appreciate you.
Oh, we appreciate you, and thank you for all your talent and all your gifts and all the work you're doing in the community. Please keep up the great work. Thank you all for listening to A Community Affair. I am your host, Tish Buford. You've been listening to KGNU Community Radio. Thank you for listening. Stay ready, always stay prepared, and always stay kind. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.